and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Laura Romans. If you want to support this podcast, please leave a review and share with your friends. On today's episode, our co-hosts Kiriko Mechanikos and Elliot Bloom sit down to discuss our current program, Diaspora Diaries, and the cinematic journey for belonging. They chat about some of their favorite films that grasp the migrant story and look at how the genre has evolved. In the end, maybe the space of cinema can be like a second home.
Hi, Kiriko.
Hi, Elliot. How is things going?
Things are going.
Okay.
What have I been up to recently? I haven't been able to watch as many films as I'd like to, actually.
Why is that?
I don't know. There's maybe too many films.
There's a lot going on
at the moment that I feel a bit paralyzed by choice of what I should watch.
But is there something you have seen recently or
nothing
at all?
We watched a film together.
We did.
Shuzhou River by Louis Ye. I really liked it. It was really cool. It's set along a river in China and sort of how this river maybe has some kind of mythical powers, but also how the more you travel on the river, the more you see every kind of person or every kind of person going through some kind of experience, let's say. But the more I was watching it, sat next to you, I kind of just realized it's Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo, but
with Wonker White sauce.
Yeah, exactly. With Wonker White sauce. I really liked it, but the ending was a bit like, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
Have you seen anything that's not Shuzhou River? And what have you been up to, actually?
Well, I was recently on a 13-hour plane trip on my way to Japan. And then I had the same amount of hours on my trip back. And yeah, that's math. I don't necessarily enjoy flying for so many hours. You know, it's not my hobby or anything, but it does give me the chance to like binge watch all the stuff that I should have already seen that I didn't watch already. Yeah. So I did like maybe 2 hours of sleep. And other than that, I just went like film back to back. And it was like all the films that, you know, I watched Begonia and then I watched Sinners, which I know is shameful to watch that on an airplane, but I did watch Sinners. And I watched The Muppet Christmas Carol that Laura told me that I had to see, which was also playing in the airplane. I saw What's Love Got to Do With It, which is the...
What is that film?
It's a film about Tina Turner. It's Tina Turner's biopic.
Okay.
It was pretty good. It's one of the films that I enjoyed the most on my way back. I watched Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I had seen already, but it just was like, I need something happy after Sinners. Yeah. Just like a bunch of films that I really enjoyed this marathon-y way of looking at film.
So your advice to anybody who's like me, paralyzed by the choice of too many films.
Go to Japan.
Yeah.
Go to Japan.
Wait for an airplane.
Book the KLM 13-hour flights. No overlay. And enjoy their monthly program. Because
I also actually struggle to watch films on airplanes.
You do?
Yeah. I just don't like it. It's just...
I love it. I also started... some films just don't have the ability to be watched in an airplane.
Exactly. I still watch Sinners on an airplane.
It was perfect, actually. It was perfect. However, I also started watching Inherent Vice, like the Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Yeah.
That's like super confusing and you're like in this marijuana high and trying to sort of like follow or not follow whatever is going on. And then in the airplane, it was just like dreadful. So I stopped halfway through. A bunch of things. Talking about going from one place to the other.
Yeah, or going to your homeland.
Or going to your homeland, in my case, when I went to Japan. We're going to talk about a program that has been going on here at Lab for a few weeks now. So I guess this episode will come out by the end of this program. That's when it will be shown here at Lab. It's called Diaspora Diaries, and it's a collection of films about diasporic experience from different places in the world, completely different time periods, but they do have quite a beautiful, intimate thematic overlap, I would say. I think you wrote something, yeah?
I did.
Okay, let's go. Roll the tapes.
If cinema gives us a sense of belonging, then what does it mean to watch films where we follow characters on their own journey, their own search for home, or those who are lost trying to find their way back? When we talk of cinema giving us that feeling of belonging, it's that physical space, that in the dark quiet of strangers, you are momentarily accepted for who you are. In a way, you're permitted by the group to sit and join and participate as the moving images flicker across the screen. It's a strange feeling. No one objects to another person being there. No one walks out. And so, this physical space evolves into a temporary home, similar to your living room, perhaps, where as a family you gather, you laugh and cry and rejoice with the sounds and images on the TV screen. And just like that, the strangers next to you become like extended family, sharing this moment with you. It's funny that so many films are about someone's quest for belonging, like Jess from Bend It Like Beckham finding her place in a Western female football team, or Mariam in Celine Sciamma's Girlhood, search for freedom and the empowerment of choosing her own community. It's funny because the place we come to watch these films give us the same brief feeling these characters are looking for. It's so common you hear from people who move away from home finding refuge in the cinema. That was the case for me when I moved to Amsterdam 5 years ago, and I'm sure for many people listening also. It was also the same for German filmmaker Wim Wenders when he moved to Paris to first try study painting, but instead found himself frequenting Parisian cinemas for entire days on end just to escape the loneliness of a foreign city. It's perhaps why his films often depict characters in foreign places searching for home, like in Paris, Texas, or trying to build their own new version of a place, like in Perfect Days. But Wim Wenders of today, I would say, is now in his old unc liberal conservative age, where he will tell you that these films are not political, that these characters' rebellion or search for belonging are not consequences of politics. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, as of last week from time of recording, Wim Wenders, president of the Berlinale Film Festival, made a statement saying filmmakers should stay out of politics, that cinema can change people, but not politics directly. And to an extent, he may have a point, that films often don't have much of a political impact, or at least that's how it may seem. But to suggest filmmakers should not be political in their films, and so in turn us too as audiences watching, is a complete betrayal of the foundations of cinema. You see, the characters we see in so many of these films about those from the diaspora, like Du Yuane from Usman Sembene's Black Girl, or Ali in Ali Fear Eats the Soul, or even Marjan in Persepolis, or the twins from Villeneuve's Incendies. We are witnessing the human consequences of political decisions. So yes, while Wim Wenders is right to say films can change people, he fails to realise that people can only be changed by films that are political. After all, whose life has really been changed by watching a Marvel film? Cinema has a unique power in uniting and gathering everyone and anyone. It combines strangers with a sense of belonging. And so, watching characters on their own journey for home and belonging, do we understand by seeing our own place in the world, our own political relation to each other? After all, cinema is the humanizing tool of politics.
That's beautiful. And so true. Oh, yeah, where to start? I'm curious to know if there is any stories about diaspora in cinema that have given you this idea of belonging for in a substantial way. Or if there's a story that is meaningful to you in a way that it has given you a better understanding of what it is to live a life in between cultures or countries.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there's two films that are in the program actually that were partly my suggestion for it was obviously
Neat.
was obviously Mississippi Masala, but also actually Bend It Like Beckham.
I've been playing football for a women's team. Huh? It's worse than I thought.
It's a proper tournament. They're real matches.
What is wrong with you, Jess? I mean, if you're going to go to all this bother line, at least do it for something good. Don't you want a boyfriend like everyone else? Now, you're quite pretty, you know. You do something with your hair and put a bit of makeup on. You look all right.
Yeah, leave her alone. I never put makeup on till after I was married.
I think Benedict Lie Beckham kind of really encapsulates for me that awkward in-betweenness of a second-generation immigrant who's caught between, like, the, I don't want to say old, but the traditions of a certain way of living from another country, India, and also just trying to get by or fit in into a British culture. And I just remember watching that film. It just captures all the nuances itself. And it's not necessarily that you connect to all perhaps the exact Indian traditions that are put in there, because Jess's character is from a Punjabi family, a Sikh, I think. But there's still a sense of like, oh, you're seeing yourself in a way reflected back on screen, or a part of yourself, and you're seeing someone else work through the emotions that maybe you're not able to work through, or have come to a different feeling of belonging that you have not yet quite reached yourself.
Mm.
And I remember that, yeah, it's a strange feeling to see your own very personal story projected so big in front of you.
I think also because the era that Benedict Lie Beckham came out, I think it's maybe like for the first time in cinema history that stories about second generation people in Europe were created, because it was to an extent, I mean, of course, a phenomenon that has existed from the beginning of time, but I think as a recognition of a community, it was, I think, then for the first time that it felt that it was a story that was needed to be told, because it was, you know, something that became so substantial in society.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that way, it's interesting because it is a very new cinematic history, a fresh cinematic history, especially from the second generation protagonists.
What's interesting is that often with first generation, there's a bit more tragedy and sadness to their stories, because there's more a sense of sacrifice and really being alone and starting from nothing. Whereas with the second generation stories like Benedict Lie Beckham, there's also this really fun sister coming of age film called Polite Society, which came out a few years ago, which is again an Indian daughter's set within Britain. But there it captures more like the humour of it all, or the awkwardness of having two cultures and how those two cultures clash, because you're very much part of both cultures, whereas a first generation is very much from their own culture, trying to integrate into a new culture, if that makes sense.
Would you say that this narrative of a first generation migrant coming to the West is a trope?
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
Yeah. And that's why, like, the whole sense of tragedy is always kind of the same thing. Like, I'm sure there are also stories, of course, again, it maybe relates a bit to what Wim Wenders, or what I was trying to say in my cold open, of how, like, these characters who are moving, it's often after political consequences, right? That they're making these decisions to move, whether it's, like, the legacy of colonialism or the outbreak of war or anything like that. In Europe, you also had a lot of migrants who moved to Europe. I'm thinking especially of like Moroccans and Turkish people who moved to like Germany and the Netherlands, and that was more just because they needed workers, and there wasn't necessarily a sense of that there was tragedy to it, but there was perhaps also a new opportunity for it.
Yeah,
and I think that you don't see it enough of. Perhaps let's say of people like being able to build a life that where they thrive in some respects, or where they do make a home, and of course they're always going to give up something, but how people may still long for their own home, but they still feel comfortable enough that they want to stay in the place that they've moved to, if they have the ability to go back still, let's say.
I think one film that I really love, I don't know if it's in the program, but I do know that it is playing quite often in cinemas here in Amsterdam, is a film called One People.
Which
is a film by Pim de la Parra about a guy who lives in Amsterdam and is like thriving and whatnot. And then he goes back to Suriname, where he's originally from, because of, I don't remember, I think it's because a family member is sick or something.
Yeah. I think it's his mother is sick.
Right. And then he goes back to Suriname, and then he's like washed up in between the Netherlands and Suriname, but represented as women. Yeah. So he falls in love with a Surinamese girl there. And then he, of course, also has a lover back home. And then he's like unable to decide like which woman to go for. And it's also, it's quite funny, yeah. But it is a very true and honest representation of this complete confusion that you can find yourself in when you move in between different cultures.
Is there a film for you that sort of captures your own experience or that you felt yourself relating to?
Well, one of the films that comes to mind immediately, and I think it's not necessarily a film that I relate to personally in a way that I recognize myself within this narrative, but I find that it is a very honest story about this loneliness that one can find itself in when you leave home. And it's a film called News from Home by Chantal Akerman. And it's a very simple concept where Chantal Akerman, she is originally from Belgium and she moves to New York at a relatively young age. And when she's there, she receives a bunch of letters from her mom, like very regularly, just being like, hey, what's up? So one of the chickens died, and the next door neighbor, she has her birthday coming up, and I heard she's also engaged. So how are things going there? Like very mundane mom stuff that she continuously communicates to her daughter. And Chantal Akerman finds herself wandering through these New York streets, you know, streets that she had seen so many times from films and references, and then you can tell from the film she feels quite lost within this mega city. And the film is basically just images of empty grayish New York streets with not a lot of people in there, and she reads out the letters that her mom has sent her like over months, and there is a big disconnect that you feel between her as a maker, her surroundings, but also to her home. Because all these letters, I mean, it's of course like a motherly love of, you know, being, letting her know that she's there. But you can tell from the things that she's saying, there's a reason maybe why she has left home in the first place. Or you can feel that they're heartfelt, but there is maybe a lack of real connection or real conversation between her and her mom. But this same disconnect manifests itself within these empty streets. You can tell that Chantal is like maybe confused or disappointed in her experience of moving there. And I think this feeling of being doomed in between different fantasies and hopes and dreams, but also the disconnect that you feel with home and then understanding the reason why you left, I feel like it's such a substantial experience that a lot of people go through when they migrate.
Yeah.
So that film, yeah, I find that it's so simple in its execution, but so, so beautiful. I love watching it. And then I think another more recent example that I really love as well is Past Lives.
Yeah,
yeah. Is he attractive?
I think so. He's really masculine in this way that I think is so Korean.
Are you attracted to him?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I don't think so.
It's a completely different film, but I think because it's, I mean, it came out like 2 years ago, maybe. And I feel as if it's a film that speaks very much to the now and how we as people, or maybe millennials, experience this being in between countries now, and also the role that digital media plays within that. Like, it's just, I think, very made in a very smart way where you see all these lines of communication going through Skype and text that feel, they're very much a part of how we live our lives now, but also there is kind of like a lot of information and connection that goes lost through those digital means of communication. And, you know, there's this supposed connection that you have with your homeland because you're Skyping your friends back home, but also not really, no. It's also a form of managing whatever you left back home, but it's a struggle that we live with, and it's quite minor, but also very present, I would say.
I think with that film, I liked that it captures more about the alternative life that could have been had that gets left behind.
Yeah.
And like the past self of you that you have to somehow come to terms with of letting go to try and live a completely different life that you tell yourself you want. And then you it's up to you to figure out if that is really what you want, but also how, you're always still, there will always be a part of you that you're missing, if that makes sense. That was a film that really connected with me, I think, when it first came out. What about what I was saying in my cold open, more about the space of the cinema being a place of belonging?
That's so nice.
Is that something you felt and experienced, or not something you thought about?
I don't think I had thought about it in that way, but I think I inherently knew, because it's the reason why you keep going back to the cinema, I guess, no? Yeah. And I think, and that also ties into the Wim Wenders thing a little bit, like, we're way past the idea that we go to the cinema to escape from real life. I mean, we do it sometimes, of course, because it's needed. But the primary reason why we go to the cinema, or at least why I go to the cinema, is because there is something that you yourself cannot put into words or figure out about your own life. So you need someone else to show that to you. So I think that's also why the title of this series is so good, The Diaspora Diaries. Like, it's really personal diaries that you might as well have been able to write yourself, but you didn't. So in that sense, this idea of having a diary that is collective or experienced by a group of people that you share the room with, I mean, that's so unique. Yeah, and so powerful and necessary. And I guess there is, of course, an element to it that makes it complicated, which is that you never truly share with one another how important that is. Because in the end, you come to the cinema by yourself and you leave alone.
Yeah,
I guess that's why often we also forget how important this is. But it is so important. I mean, probably a big part of how I have come to understand my own identity as a person with bicultural background is through cinema. 100%.
It's also a medium, right, that your parents or your relatives, not that they will show you films, but unnecessarily always, but they themselves perhaps don't have the words to put to their own experience or what they've gone through, and to be able to see that you somehow develop that compassion or that understanding of some things that you only know perhaps your, or for instance my mum, for the person of her being my mum and not the life that she lived before that. And then the fact that you see that on screen, you then start to be able to join that together of what her life could have been like. It also helps open up that relationship, I think, because of that understanding you develop from watching such films.
I'm curious to know how you feel about this, because I think there's one element that's very specific to the second generation experience of living in a country that is maybe not the country of home to your parents or one of your parents. And I think it's this doomed feeling of being in between forever for your entire life and not really ever finding home anywhere. And I feel as if, I mean, I've come to terms with the idea that that is something that you will maybe struggle with for the rest of your life. And it's kind of, funny enough, there's a funny element to this feeling, right? It's kind of minor because it's not a real problem that will pull you into this tragedy that we spoke of before, but it is confusing and unsettling and uncomfortable that you will continuously have to sort of re-examine what your identity is, or if it's even there in the first place, if your identity knows a history. And I think there's a sense of loneliness within that feeling.
Yeah.
And I think many of the films that speak on this feeling, the good films have a very strong sense of going to the cinema lonely and leaving with the same void in a way. And I'm curious to know how you feel about, you know, what is the role that these films play within our life? Like, what does it add upon the confusion that we already have if we just acknowledge it and, I guess, understand it better? But then it also is kind of like it doesn't go towards an end in a way, no?
No, but I would say, so firstly, obviously, it's the feeling of being seen, right? So already in that recognition, you don't see yourself as alone as you perhaps thought you were, even though still existing in that in-between space can be lonely. But I would perhaps say that I would like maybe the next wave of films that talk about the diaspora can move past this. So like we were saying, the first generation is more about the tragedy of it, what you sacrifice and what you give up. The second generation is perhaps more existing in that in-between space. And I would say maybe not necessarily the third generation, but at least what I'm starting to maybe witness more around me and in circles is that what you were saying about how you don't belong to anywhere in a sense. In a way, you don't necessarily belong to everywhere also, but you do belong to more places than you thought you did, right? Like, it gives you the opportunity to move through different spaces in a way that other people can't, that you meet more people. And so then not only are you connecting with perhaps the culture of your parents or your ancestors, but also the culture from where you grew up, but then you're also through meeting people who have a similar experience but are connected to other cultures, does it then tie you in a way that makes you, that you would never be open enough perhaps to have those relations to? Because you have a shared experience in a way that perhaps someone who's come from Africa to Europe and someone who's come from Asia to Europe, there's still that shared feeling and not necessarily the exact shared experience, if that makes sense.
Can you think of it's like a third culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Spaces.
Exactly.
Or and communities. Well,
if I look at like my own life in Amsterdam, as it's like a very international city, I think 40% of the population here is from some kind of immigrant background. The people that I'm mainly friends with all have that shared migrant experience, whether it's first or second generation. And I don't think I would be able to perhaps as comfortably move through that space if I didn't have that experience as well of being stuck in between.
Mm. Can you think of any films that have an honest representation of this of this third culture life?
Well, no, and that's why I was saying I think I would like to see filmmakers now try to move into that space of what that looks like.
I cannot think of one either. No. I feel like it's also more used, like second generation, I don't know, communities of people from different migrant backgrounds is more like a marketing tool for inclusive, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I don't think I can think of any story that sort of, shows what the real experience of that life is.
But how fun would that be to see like a new take on that experience? That
That's absurd, no?
Yeah.
Can I really not think of anything? Wait.
Big gap in the market.
Big gap in the market. Yeah, for sure. Oh my God. Let's start making those films. I'm shocked. Oh my God. There's one film that is in the program that you wanted to talk about a bit further, which is Incendies by Villeneuve.
Yeah.
What is it about that film that...
I think it probably ties well to Wim Wenders, in the sense that, again, to catch people up, Wim Wenders is president of the jury for the Berlinale Festival, and he was asked about the genocide in Gaza, and he was saying that he doesn't think it's a filmmaker's role to be political, but that he believes films can change people, but not politics. And I can understand, in a sense, what he's trying to say, and in his mindset or in his bubble, because it's very hard to see how a film being made can lead to direct political action always, although I think there are definitely examples of that throughout history. But the thing about Incendies is also that it removes the politics in a way. Like,
do you want to explain what the film's about?
It's about a brother and a sister from an Arabic background. It's ambiguous, but perhaps it's from Lebanon. And they move, it's about them growing up in Canada. Their mother dies and they go through the process of trying to understand exactly who their mother was and how they came to be and how they ended up in Canada. And as it unravels, it, without revealing too much, it shows basically their mother as a political prisoner, the abuse she suffered, and them coming to terms with that trauma and how that trauma is carried on, not from just the mother, but passed down to the children, both in how they were raised, but also in the sense of, like, just through DNA and genetics and memory, that sense of trauma being remembered. And it's a very powerful way of, like I said, there is a certain sense of politics being removed from it because it's not explicit of who's exactly doing what and who are the perpetrators and all of this. But what Villeneuve does is he gives faces to all of it, and so you draw the connections of the, what I was trying to say in my monologue, of the human consequences of political decisions. And so you see the legacy and the leftover of how two children who had no necessary exposure to such violence still carry the violence and pain within them and trying to work through that process. And I think it's such a brilliant way of trying to invite as many people in to watch that film without necessarily confronting them with politics that might rub them the wrong way, or for them not to, for them to easily disengage and dismiss someone else's experience. And so in that way, yeah, it's a great film in capturing that. And also how we link it back to diaspora of, like, how can you build a home with this past self or this cultural memory of your ancestors and your family? Of, like, how does what your understanding of a home change when you are perhaps awakened to your own personal history? And that, in that sense, makes it very political, because then it's the question of, well, what are you going to do about it? Of, like, do you just accept it and then live in this sort of ignorance or naivety and continue living in a, in like a more comfortable, safe space that you don't necessarily feel a part of? Or is there some kind of awakening, and what happens after that?
One thing that I think is so powerful about this film is that, so the two protagonists of the story are twins, a boy and a girl. And the moment that they are confronted with the fact that their mother has had a history before them that they might not know of, they kind of go in two different directions, no? Like, the girl, she is curious and is sort of open to discover this past. And the boy is in complete denial of wanting to know everything, anything that has to do with his mother, because he felt that he was not raised in a good way. And so he doesn't want to have anything to do with her. But already in this moment, you feel that the trauma is so present within their lives without them realizing what that trauma is. And I think it's such a good representation of how we as humans deal with these forms of historical trauma in a much larger scale, is that the denial is, I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
However, it's, the denial itself is a manifestation in a much clearer way of the trauma than the acceptance of the trauma being there.
Yeah. And I think, again, also the, like I was saying, is because it's ambiguous of where it is and, of where it's set, it also makes it easier to project it onto any kind of conflict or war of aggression that you can then easily see how this, what's happening to these two individuals, can happen to anybody that's caught up in such violence.
Yeah.
Maybe then also to move on to, I think it's worth talking about Persepolis also. Again, especially in relation to what Wim Wenders is saying. I mean, maybe I would actually like to ask you what you felt of what Wim Wenders said explicitly, and also what I wrote in response.
I don't know. I think it's like, I don't know if he's ignorant or if he's in a way protecting himself, because I feel like there is no way in hell that you can truly believe that there is no political power to films, specifically his films.
Yeah.
I mean, regarding the history of films that they've made, they're extremely political. Yeah. I mean, he was a young boy raised in the ruins of Berlin.
Yeah, exactly.
And he made a film about the death that surrounded him growing up in that environment.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's kind of absurd
yeah.
that he has come to this point in his life where maybe he has forgotten about that the life that he has lived. Maybe this is his way of making peace with the trauma that he's had in his life.
Yeah,
I think it's truly absurd. And I don't think it's ignorance. I think it's a protection of maybe his own peace and maybe his...
Yeah.
He thinks that it is a way of protecting his career. It clearly isn't because I think the critique that he has now is pretty massive, or at least I have the impression that it's pretty big.
Yeah.
It's so sad because I feel like this loneliness of being by yourself, going to another place in the world, is something that he has been able to express in a really profound way. There are so many films of his that I saw that made me understand this need to move away from the life that you've lived and to go and seek out a new opportunity in a different land, you know, somewhere at the end of the highway. It's such a Wim Wenders trope, I would say, that it's kind of absurd that he's come to this point. So I think, I mean, I hope that I'm able to disconnect what he has said this week from how I experience his films, because I love his work very much.
Yeah.
And I hope that I will still be able to see them with the same love that I've been able to experience them before.
Yeah. It's weird to think that if that was then his approach to making the films that he did, that he didn't think that they were political films, because even if you look at Perfect Days, that is a film of hope. And like, especially that came out, what, 2 years ago, 2024? And like, to have hope at that time is quite a radical act. And it's such a cliche to say of how hope is probably the most political act of all. And for him to not see that or to choose to turn away from that is a strange, it's very bizarre.
Well, you want to know something funny about that?
Please. So
I was recently in Japan, right? And I was talking with a friend of mine who is a film critic who lives in Tokyo about Perfect Days, because I think it's one of the more recent films that I saw coming from Japan, not a Japanese production, but a Japanese narrative that I really loved. So I was talking with her about it and asking what she thought of it. And she wrote, apparently, I didn't know, a very bad review of this film, because she said that it was easy for him as an outsider to romanticize what life would be like in lower class Japan. She said he has no fucking idea of what the real problems are that you face when you are a toilet cleaner in Tokyo. She said it's a very European thing to make this life beautiful in another country that is not your own.
Yeah.
Whereas were you to showcase this life in maybe your home country, you would know that it is not an aspirational life. It gave me a new way of looking at Perfect Days.
It's funny, your mum, when I spoke to her at your birthday, she said the exact same thing.
Really?
Yeah, the fact that... it's funny to work back through this, but how like he doesn't show you the consequences of what living in a very precarious job situation or living in a working class life is actually really like. It's much more fantasized or romanticized.
Yeah.
Which
I mean, it really is. You walk out of the cinema being like,
if only life could be
so simple here. Yeah. So Wim Wenders never really knew what he was talking about.
As we come to a close, but more to focus on Persepolis, in the sense of like, if you ever wanted an example of how a film is political, I think Persepolis is probably a very political film, and it's still and had consequences. I'm pretty sure Marjan Stapi is probably not allowed to go back to Iran after making that film. And I mean, you even have Jafar Panahi, who's wanted again by the Iranian regime for his film It Was Just an Accident. And I think it shows you actually that in both these cases, that governments and authoritarian regimes, they are scared of films. They are scared of the power that it can have on influencing people, of changing people's minds, of perhaps awakening them to a certain kind of truth, that they feel the need to persecute such such artists. And I think it would be interesting to ask Wim Wenders about that, what he thinks about why regimes react in such a way to filmmakers if he doesn't think there's a power in a political power in making films.
Yeah.
What would you say?
To him?
No, not to him. Love Perfect Days.
I mean, yeah, it's fucking obvious, no? Like, yeah. if we look at the history of films for as long as it's existed,
yeah,
they are now, for the human experience, the prime source of art history. I mean, the way that we have come to understand our own history is through fucking cave paintings fucking, you know, Renaissance paintings.
Yeah.
Who was Napoleon? Just look at the Louvre and all the ways in which he was represented. I think now it's cinema that gave me a better understanding of how the 20th century was.
Yeah. Yeah,
It's really my prime historical source.
Yeah.
And even though I know that it's not, you know, factual historical sources, because so many people are able to make stories that feel true to themselves, I think that I know to some extent how lives that are not my own are being lived. If you make films, Wim Wenders, you know that a truthful story comes from the heart, and especially a truthful story about pain and oppression is understood when it's told honestly or truthfully.
Yeah
I don't know what to say. Like, it's as if you're explaining something to a child. Almost.
Yeah,
I hope he'll get back from this. I mean, he's pretty old.
I mean, I'd give up on him. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe
he's in his, like I said, unk stage. But no, but I just think, as we've always needed, you've always needed artists and filmmakers to not only contextualize, but to put images and words to the feelings that we're having. And so, like, with any kind of liberation movement or any kind of form of resistance, it's no surprise that there have always been some kind of culture and artistic work produced out of that to reflect that back for people to be able to access it in a way that makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets missed a bit, of how an important role artists play in doing that, of connecting politics to people. That makes it more accessible, because not everyone is always going to understand or make sense of why someone is reacting in such a kind of way. Maybe to the in-group it seems obvious, but to a wider group you need something else to speak to them, to emotionally capture their participation.
I mean, the times that we live in are absurd. And I have a lot of hope in the fact that now there is a large group of filmmakers who are not undermining the world that we live in, and have the courage to make the stories about all the pain that the world is going through right now.
Yeah.
With that, I think I am more than willing to give up Wim Wenders, because he's delivered what he had to deliver. And I think it's also, I mean, it's sad that for a generation that has gone through big horrors a little less than 100 years ago, undermined the situation that we live in now. But thankfully, there's also enough people his age that, what is left to say?
Well, I just hope filmmakers feel the urge to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's the easiest way to change his mind.
Yeah. Added on to that, I'm looking forward to the film of this second generational third culture friend group.
Yes.
Going about their lives, that's not, you know, Charlie's Angels.
Yeah. Maybe to wrap up, we did, of course, do an episode on Wim Wenders before he entered into this crazy Unk stage. But if you want to get a better understanding of what his films are like and just how well he actually did capture this feeling of searching for belonging, I recommend listening back to that.
Another episode that I think ties in very well with this episode is the episode that Hugo and Laura recorded recently about the distinction between the artist and their work,
yeah,
and how we can deal with cancelled,
yeah,
artists.
Yeah, yeah.
It made me think a lot about that during our conversation now.
Yeah, it's funny because he's cancelled in a very different kind of way, but
totally.
But also much needed, maybe.
Yeah.
And then maybe the only other thing to add is that in the next few weeks we're going to have an episode coming up on Il Conformista, and authoritarianism and fascism and how that relates to cinema, which I think ties nicely to the conversation.
Another cancelled film director, by the way, Bertolucci.
But yeah, hope you enjoyed listening.
Goodbye.
Stay connected with us at Celebrating Cinema and Lab by following at Lab111 on Instagram and Letterboxd. Do you love what we do? Support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us climb the ranks of the podcast charts.
This was a Lab111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom and co-produced by myself, Laura Romans. Music comes from Hugo Emmertzell and the artwork is by Studio FFF.